Welcome to 10 Minute Bible Talks,
where we connect the Bible to your life
in the time it takes to get to work.
I'm Patrick Miller.
Have you ever said this is the most important election of our lifetime? Or even that this is the most important election of history? Well, if you haven't said it, I promise others have. You hear it during almost every major election cycle. I've heard it so much, I've started to wonder whether people are losing their memories or at least losing their minds. But of course they aren't. This is just an old political ploy used to ramp up anxiety about the future. Politicians and pundits know that the more anxious they are, the more likely they are to drum up votes and get more views on their cable shows. I'm not at all surprised that these tactics work year after year, election after election, because they prey on our most basic human emotion, fear. We are quite literally designed to be afraid, and for good reason. You see, it's good to be afraid of heights. If you aren't, you might fall and die. It's good to be afraid of fire, because if you touch it, you might get burned. It's good to be afraid of things that really are threats to your life or your limbs. But fear is also very easy to hijack. And because we humans have the ability to think about the future and to even plan for the future, it's no surprise that we are also able to fear about the future. Politicians and journalists know it, and they know that the more afraid you are, the better off they are. So the question should be, what about Christians? Are we afraid about the future? I ask because we claim to worship a king who claims to know what the future holds. He says that in the present, he reigns in heaven, and one day he will return to reign on heaven and earth. He will resurrect the dead and bring us into eternal bliss. So surely we aren't afraid about the future, right? Surely politicians can't work us up. Surely media pundits don't make our cortisol levels spike. Surely journalists can't make us anxious. Well, of course they can. This is why we need Daniel chapter 8. On the surface, it's an easy chapter to ignore because it's all about Persian and Greek history and it's all told using apocalyptic imagery, so it's both historical and weird. But here's why we need it. Because Daniel received a vision about the future. God showed Daniel what would happen nearly 2 centuries before it took place, and what took place was unpredictable and terrifying. And so this was God's way of telling Daniel and all of his future readers that he saw the future, he holds the future in his hands, and as bad as things get, they need to know he saw it coming and he will see them through. So they have nothing to worry about. That's why we need Daniel 8 today, because when we realize that God has already predicted the future and controlled the future, we can be confident that the same still applies today. No election is the most important because no election is of ultimate importance. No nation is of ultimate importance. You can put anyone in the Oval Office or Buckingham Palace and none of it matters because they're all under the throne of King Jesus, who knows the future and commands the future. Just check this out. I'll read through the vision of Daniel 8. This is a vision that Daniel had before 520 BC. And it tells about events that took place between 335 and 168 BC, so about 200 to 400 years after his lifetime. Daniel 8:3, I raised my eyes and saw, and behold, a ram standing on the bank of a canal. It had 2 horns, and both horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. I saw the ram charging westward and northward and southward. No beast could stand before him, and there was no one who could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased and became great. Okay, so let's pause. Again, apocalyptic imagery here. The ram is the Persian Empire, and its 2 horns represent 2 groups who ruled over it at different times and at some points consecutively, the Persians and the Medes. Here's the key. Daniel predicted that they would rise to power before they actually did. And like he said, their empire turned out to be one of the largest and longest lasting in human history. Let's continue to verse 5. As I was considering, behold, a male goat came from the west, across the face of the whole earth, without touching the ground. And the goat had a conspicuous horn between its eyes. He came to the ram with the 2 horns, which I had seen standing on the bank of the canal. And he, this is the goat, ran at him, the ram, in his powerful wrath. I saw him come close to the ram, and he was enraged against him, and he struck the ram and broke his 2 horns. And the ram had no power to stand before him, but the goat cast him down to the ground and trampled on him, and there was no one who could rescue the ram from the goat's power. Okay, so this levitating goat is the Greek Empire, and it was led by the Macedonian Alexander the Great. 200 years after Daniel, Alexander did the impossible and defeated the Persian Empire in a period of about 13 years. Alexander was unstoppable, but he died an early death. And this leads to verse 8, where Alexander is represented as one horn and will be replaced by multiples. Let's go. Verse 8. Then the goat became exceedingly great. But when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And instead of it, there came up four conspicuous horns toward the four winds of heaven. Again, Daniel is seeing the future. After Alexander died, the one horn, his kingdom was divided into four different kingdoms led by four different people. And those kingdoms turned out to be weaker kingdoms. Two of those kingdoms fought continually over the land of Israel. One to the south was called the Ptolemaic Empire, and the other to the north was called the Seleucid Empire. So we'll talk about that now. Verse 9, out of one of them grew a little horn. So he's describing one of the four horns, which grew exceedingly great towards the south. This is the Ptolemaic Empire, toward the east and toward the glorious land. It grew great, even to the host of heaven, and some of the host of heaven of the stars it threw down to the ground and trampled them. So Daniel is saying that the Ptolemaic Empire would be strong for a time over Israel, and then it would eventually be defeated by the Seleucid Empire. Historically, this is what happened when a ruler named Antiochus Epiphanes IV took charge. You see, he hated Jews, and he attempted to end the worship of Yahweh. And to do this, he slaughtered unclean animals on the altar in Jerusalem. Some of the Jewish people were scared enough of him that they went along with him, but others didn't. Daniel saw all of this four centuries before it happened. So now he's describing these idolatrous Seleucids. It became great, even as great as the prince of the host, and the regular burnt offering was taken away from him, and the place of his sanctuary was overthrown. So this is talking about what happened in the temple, where this Seleucid ruler, Antiochus Epiphanes, ended the sacrifices. And a host will be given over to it with the regular burnt offering because of transgression, and it will throw truth to the ground, and it will act and prosper. Daniel keeps going, but he wants us to know that there's good news. All of these terrible events that people will one day face, they will come to an end. And so Daniel asks the guy giving him the vision how long this will last for, and he hears this answer. For 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state. Now, I understand that you just heard a lot of names and historical information, and I don't expect you to remember it all. Instead, I want to impress upon you the experience of realizing that Yahweh saw the future. And not just that, Yahweh controls the future. Yes, it's true, the empires and the powers of this world will run amok. But in the end, they are defeated. In the end, the world is restored. In Daniel 12, we learn that in the end, there is a resurrection. In Daniel 4 and 7, we are reminded that the kingdom of God crushes the kingdoms of this world. And God does that through self-sacrifice, through the self-sacrifice of a son of man who will die and rise and sit on God's throne and rule. That man is Jesus. You are not living through a moment so horrific that these truths become untrue. I don't say that to minimize the horror of injustice, suffering, or pain, but I do say it to relativize everything. Jesus is on the throne. He controls the future. What do you have to worry about? Nothing. Nothing at all. 10-Minute Bible Talks is a crowdfunded project. If this podcast is helping you grow in your faith and you want more people to experience what you're experiencing, would you consider joining our team by giving? Even a monthly gift of $10 can make a big difference. All gifts are tax deductible. Just click the link in the show notes and join our team.